From information furnished by French sources, Mr. Jacob Schiff appears to have given $12 million for the Russian Revolution in 1917. If we now turn to Mrs. Webster's The Surrender of an Empire, we get some additional information about the rise of Bolshevism. It seems that the real name of the individual mentioned above in Section 3 under the designation of Parvis is Israel Lazarevich Helphand, and that he is a Jew of the province of Minsk in White Russia. In the second half of the 80s, he took part in revolutionary work in Odessa. In 1886, he went abroad and finally, after many wanderings, went to Copenhagen, where he amassed a large fortune as the chief agent for the supply of German coal to Denmark, working through the Danish Social Democratic Party. Dr. Ziv, in his Life of Trotsky, relates that when he was in America in 1916, he said to Trotsky, "How is Parvis?" To which Trotsky replied laconically, "Completing his 12th million." It is this Jewish multimillionaire who, after Karl Marx, was the great inspirer of Lenin. It was through the intervention of Parvis that Lenin was sent back to Russia by the Germans. Lenin was dispatched from Switzerland to Russia in a locked train and was provided with no less than £2,500,000 by the German Imperial Bank. It was not, therefore, as a needy revolutionary setting forth on a precarious mission, his soul lit with pure zeal for the cause of the workers, that Lenin journeyed into Russia, but as a well-tried agent, versed in all the tricks of intrigue and the art of propaganda, and backed by the powerful organization of international finance. The people accompanying him were predominantly aliens. Out of a list of 165 names published, 23 are Russian, 3 Georgian, 4 American, 1 German, and 128 Jewish. The English accuse the Germans of having sent Lenin to Russia. We have seen the influences at the back of that action. On the other hand, the Germans accuse the English of having sent Trotsky back, for Trotsky was set free from arrest by order of the British government. He had been arrested at Halifax when he was needed by Jacob Schiff and the others, as we saw above. The truth is that Jewish financial influences were working behind the governments of both peoples for their own ends. Russia is not a triumph for the workers, but seems to be a gigantic investment of Jewish capitalists for their own ends. Amid the welter of details about Russia, the great fact must not be lost sight of, that the men who seized power and retain it, as the taskmasters of the rationed and ticketed people of Russia, were put there by a certain number of Jewish capitalists. The Russian middle class and the nobles, the natural leaders of the people, were exterminated, while the manual workers, who were too uneducated to see through the plans of the investors, were extolled to the skies. The last testimony we shall cite in this connection is that of a distinguished scholar who carefully studied communism in action and then was not afraid to tell the truth. It is taken from the Impressions of Soviet Russia by Charles Sorrelli. Quote, "That the Jews have played a leading part in the Bolshevist government is a proposition which no one will deny who has taken the trouble to study Russian affairs at first hand. I am quite ready to admit that the Jewish leaders are only a proportionately infinitesimal fraction, even as the British rulers in India are an infinitesimal fraction. But it is nonetheless true that those few Jewish leaders are the masters of Russia, even as the 1,500 Anglo-Indian civil servants are the masters of India. For any traveler in Russia to deny such a truth would be to deny the evidence of his own senses. When you find that out of a large number of important foreign office officials whom you have met, all but two are Jews, you are entitled to say that the Jews are running the Russian Foreign Office. When you find that in the Congress of the Third Internationale, all the debates from beginning to end are directed by Zinoviev and Radek, you are entitled to say that those two Jewish Bolshevists are running the Third Internationale. When you find that the same Zinoviev is also the omnipotent dictator of Petrograd, that he was also the chairman of the Congress of Baku. When you further find that the above-mentioned Radek is the ubiquitous agitator and the chief of the Bolshevist propaganda department, when you discover at the same time that the leaders in every other Bolshevist revolution in Budapest, in Bavaria, are invariably Jews, you are driven to the conclusion that the Jews have been the protagonists of the Russian drama." End of quote. Earlier in the same work we read, quote, most of the places at the universities are reserved for boys and girls of approved atheist and Bolshevist principles. It is thus that in Moscow University, 80% of the medical students are communist Jews, end of quote. The tree planted by the Jewish Union for Civilization and Science has borne fruit. How does the Communist Internationale seek to subject other countries? In Spain, the Republican elements, Masonic and Bolshevist, together with a certain number of honest, decent Catholics, who did not grasp the full meaning of the struggle in the world against the mystical body of which they are members, combined to overthrow the monarchy. Masonry, as we have seen, is aiming at subjecting all countries to the world republic, just as communism is. The same forces practically control both sections of the Revolutionary Army, Masons and Communists. The communists in the cities then profited by the arrival of the Masons to power to begin the attack on the supernatural life of the country by burning churches and convents.